He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
Right? And look, they might get him. Maybe he gets his shit together and he recognizes the fact that if he doesn't get his shit together for the Lakers with LeBron, potentially with Luka, probably for sure, then your career, you're looking at veteran minimum contracts for a little bit. And then the Guangdong Tigers in China, eventually, like these careers, Raj, in this CBA, they're going to go so much faster. Like everything is so sped up in the CBA where that's why you saw him get bought out. That was not a thing that used to happen. No. Somebody eventually would trade for him and at least take a shot before the season. Normally you would see a buyout on somebody like Ayton, you know, towards the end of the season after he is once again really bad or he gets hurt or something like that. Raj, he's in year seven. He's averaged a double-double for 7 years running. Yeah. He is still plenty athletic, no crazy surgeries in his background, no criminal activity, no controversies that you have to worry about. Like that everything other than motor on and off the court is the question here on this guy. And you've seen a guy within his first big contract go from somebody that the Pacers were willing to completely screw up and hold up their books for multiple days to somebody who is now available to those same Pacers. And the Pacers are kind of sort of looking at him like, it might be good.
Well, he has a lot to thank to the Pacers because the whole reason he has this current contract, remember how the relationship with the Phoenix Suns all pretty much deteriorated was. Phoenix said, "We're not going to pay you, but if you go find someone who will, then we'll match it." And Ayton and his team and representatives went out and found Indiana. Indiana sent him a really nice offer sheet, max offer sheet, and Phoenix matched it. And that's the current contract he's on. So there is some relationship there, you know, between the Pacers. But yeah, Ayton's so fun. He's like the rich man's version of Cam Reddish, right? Where like the proof has already been shown, kind of like
I swear, Raj, one of the theories I will die on this takes hill that we're talking about a very different career for DeAndre Ayton if Phoenix just pays him after he did everything that he needed to do to help them get to a championship, right? Like if, because what happened, maybe I'll bring somebody from Phoenix on here and maybe I'll bring somebody from Portland on here at some point to talk about DeAndre Ayton if it becomes a little bit more real. But with what it seemed to me from an outsider's perspective was that he did those things. He set hard screens. He rolled hard to the basket. He was attentive on defense. He rebounded. He did all of these little things and was an important player on a team that made it to the championship series. And then Phoenix played hardball with him. And somebody who, like you texted me today, right, came into the league saying, "I'm playing for contracts," which is not ideal, little Bynum-ish, but somebody who was very financially driven was like, "Well, that didn't work in terms of getting me the contract that I was looking for. Well, maybe I got to go about it the more traditional way. ISOs with, you know, post moves and post isolations and highlight reel blocks and highlight reel dunks that, you know, sometimes sell out your teammates that in order to get there." Like I truly believe that DeAndre Ayton's career would have gone really, really differently if Phoenix would have just given him his extension and showed him, "All right, you play like that, and you keep getting these checks." But since then, it's been like, no, you're not getting that check then. You're also not getting it for going about it the wrong way, because obviously he's going about it the wrong way. And he's been in this, like, on this really bad treadmill of poor development basically ever since. And I kind of sort of feel for the guy. I honestly kind of do.
I think the thing the Lakers have, well, they don't really have a choice here because they're in a desperation mode. But the question is, do they have an ecosystem that really can, you know, survive that or can change a guy and put him in a place where he's looking around going, if I fuck up, I'm the only one messing up, right? Like, if I mess up, I'm the only one that, you know, I'm going to be held accountable by everybody. And so I think that's something that they got to really look at, how serious they are next year. You know, do they have the infrastructure to do that? When Dwight Howard came here in 2020, right, he was a very much, you know, guy that was being thrown out the league, not for talent, but because he was just an issue everywhere he went, was a problem, you know, reportedly in Atlanta, just had issues with teammates. And he came here and he was a model citizen. Now the Lakers gave him a non-guaranteed deal, so that probably helped within that. I think his deal wasn't guaranteed until December or something like that. Yep. And the Lakers waited pretty long before they decided to guarantee it, as well as he played through that season. But that's the thing with Ayton. And, you know, I was texting you, there's the Bynum comp, I think, is just so funny and so interesting that's come out for him. But yeah, he's a super talented player. That you look at the numbers, he's a pick and roll, just monster. If you look at, like, just NBA has these shot charts, and, you know, like, when you're not shooting well, when you don't shoot well from that area, it's red, but if you shoot well, it's green.
Yeah.
He's green from so many places in areas that centers should not be green from. It's like
he's a
47.
Super talented player.
47.
He went first in the Luka draft.
That's a good point. That is very, very true. Like, yeah.
You know how good you have to be coming into now. There are some dumb GMs, right?
Yeah, Marvin Bagley went too.
It was Bobby Sarves who was running the Suns back then. You owned the Suns back then. You had Vlade in Sacramento, which obviously also helped too. Atlanta traded Luka, which, you know, those people were fired with the quickness eventually too. So, there are reasons that he went first in the Luka draft, but still he has he's not like a talent bust. Like, who's the kid that Cleveland drafted?
Anthony Bennett is the talent bust.
That guy was a talent bust.
Yes.
That guy just didn't have the talent. Shouldn't have been taken first overall in that pick. You have like Greg Oden type of bus, right? Where
injuries,
his body just didn't hold up. And I know people don't like using the bust word with him, but he was one. Like, if part of the thing that you're investing in with these guys is that their body is going to hold up and his didn't.
Yeah.
And it's especially tough when the other guy is Kevin Durant right after him. And then in this case with Ayton, he's kind of a mental bust, right? Where like he is great. Like, he is everything that teams would want from his neck down. And it's just a matter of, can the Lakers get the head, the neck from the shoulders up in where it needs to be?
Well, here's what's so tantalizing about him, Anthony, is that there's guys, and I'm not saying Walker Kessler can't be right, but Walker Kessler, in my opinion, has not played a game that has mattered yet in his career, right? Like, just Utah has been fumbling. They have been tanking at strange times. He's never played in the playoffs. Ayton has real playoff experience. He has finals experience. And the Lakers don't have to look too far because he did against us. I think he was incredible. Obviously, Anthony Davis's injury really clouds over that series. But Ayton was awesome against – people forget this. AD went down. I believe LeBron also went down, but the Lakers had the number one defense going into that playoffs. They had a bunch of point of attack defenders. You might notice one of the names is Alex Caruso. Another name is KCP. They had just an incredible defensive team. They were feisty, but Ayton dominated those switches. Chris Paul and Devin Booker did their part, but I thought Ayton was just dominant and did all the stuff that you're talking about that got him, that the Suns asked him to do before he was paid. Defense, rebound, screen hard, block shots, protect the rim. So it's not a, can he do this? It's, can you get him invested in the team to understand the bigger picture, to understand we do well, you do well. From a cynical standpoint, you are going to be on a contract year. I believe I doubt the Lakers or any team would give him more than one season under contract. But and maybe some team throws an extra year, one plus one.
There's some whispers out there that
Wherever he signs, it might be a 1-1 type deal, you know, where it's like
maybe a player option for a lesser amount or whatever it is. But you're not going to find a 26-year-old finals experience starting center this talented. Doesn't exist on the market. It is just not out there for the price that you can get him at, where you don't have to give up a single asset. And that's why I think Ayton has jumped. Everyone's like, why are all Laker fans going after DeAndre Ayton? It's not about DeAndre Ayton. He just lowered his money from $35 million to $8 million.
Yeah.
He's going to make Max Christie. I love Max Christie, by the way, but he's going to get Max Christie contract next season. That is a huge gift if the Lakers are able to pull that off. And I think that's why the offseason hinges on this. Maybe a LeBron trade request hinges on, like, it is a massive, massive decision that they have to kind of convince him to take less money or wherever, you know, offers he's getting. But Ayton is extremely talented, and I think he's their number one target this offseason.
Yeah, I as far as I can tell, the Lakers are definitely in on him. I called them reluctant favorites on Ayton so far. Some of it is sourced, some of it's connecting the dots, some of it is just kind of looking at the other teams that he could potentially either go to or whatever. Super interesting on this, Raj. Chris Haynes came out and was
adamant,
super adamant. This is done. This is where he's going. I saw Jake Fisher today report that he would be surprised if Ayton isn't a Laker when it's all said and done. Then I saw Dave McMenamin come out and say that he hasn't heard it in the same way. Shams hasn't said anything about it to the best of what I've seen. And I saw Windhorst, I think, also connected the dots after Milwaukee made their move for Miles Turner and said that this probably opened Ayton up to the Lakers as a more distinct possibility. And over the course of the day, you know, I would say my confidence probably still remains at like 75-25 in, you know.
Oh, and so it got higher than the
number. You, I think I said it was 70.
You said 60-40.
No, yesterday it was 60-40. Then the Milwaukee thing happened. Now it's 75-25.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. You didn't send me an update. That's what it was.
I thought I did.
That's okay.
All right. I'm going to go through. Moment of truth here. Oh, I guess I didn't. My bad.
Okay.
My bad.
But that makes you feel 75 is good. That's good.
Oh, we actually never texted after the Milwaukee thing. And I'm looking at it. My bad. Raj, I have it about 75-25.
Okay.
You feel
that's
better?
That's good. I feel a lot better, actually. Yeah. And again, my brain is doing this thing, Anthony, where I'm in one side, I'm like extremely on pins and needles for this, and the other is going DeAndre Ayton. Like, it all hinges around this.
Yeah.
But you go through the names, and you know, people are, I think, jokingly telling me Koloko, which, like, I really think Koloko as a third big is not terrible for your team. But but you look around and you canvass the league for what's available. Not much after DeAndre Ayton. You get into Goga territory, and all those kind of guys are a little less proven, that you're taking even higher risks on just talent and can they play, you know, minutes on a contending type team. So that's why I think Ayton at the price, dollar amount, talent, production, risk, reward, he's the number one option.
I have been wondering what his market actually is. So I think it's kind of worth it to go through some of these potential teams and just run my thinking by you and see where you sit on this.
Okay.
So we'll start with Indiana, who I think most people kind of immediately jumped and said, well, they just lost Turner. They made the previous restricted free agent offer to Ayton, you know, 4 years ago. Maybe now that he's even cheaper, they would be interested again. And I'm not here to say that any of that is incorrect. The part of it that the place that I'm kind of hung up on with Indiana, they aren't going to have their best player all year. He blew his Achilles in the last game of the finals, in game seven of the NBA finals. So he's probably going to, you know, miss at the very least the vast majority of the regular season. And I don't see enough talent on that roster. Now, the East really sucks. So maybe, just maybe, they stay in it and they consider themselves play-in teams, or play a very low-seeded playoff team, because the East is terrible. But to me, what I kind of think, especially after they just let their center walk for nothing, their starting center, who's a much better player than Ayton, walk for nothing, is that I think they're probably going to consider this a pseudo rebuild year, where you see what Nembhard can be as a primary ball handler. You see what the rest of your young kind of core can be on their own without Halliburton. You try to maybe flip a couple of guys for some assets, and then when Halliburton comes back, you try to quickly rebuild your team for a healthy Halliburton season. And I don't think spending $14 million on DeAndre Ayton is a part of that plan.
Yeah. First of all, I think Indiana should have got a lot more crap for just, number one, the offer that they gave to Miles Turner. I believe it was 3 years, $60 million was, I think Jake Fisher reported the number that came out. Tyrese Halliburton, Anthony, is 25. He's going to miss one season. Maybe even, I'm guessing he's going to miss the whole next season. But in any case, you were up at half in game seven of the NBA Finals. They were up at half, 42, 41, or whatever it was. And you let your starting center walk for nothing. I don't know. I thought that got blown over way too quickly. People are kind of mentioning the struggles Miles Turner had in different series. But in any case, I thought he was extremely helpful. People are saying Pacer for life, and they just let him walk. I thought they should have got a lot more crap for that. But in the Ayton case, I mean, I guess I can see it now. If you let Turner walk, then why, I guess, go out and get, you know, they could also look at him as a stopgap center, to your point of looking at what Nembhard can be as a pick and roll guard with more touches, and give him a center that's really productive in that way. But I can see your point as well, in terms of if they're already rebuilding, and they also, I think, Anthony, have a lot of young centers on the roster, right, that they've drafted. I think Isaiah Jackson's one of those guys that they can get a deeper look at as well, instead of going out and getting Ayton a few 4 years after they gave him the offer sheet. So it'll be interesting to see if they're a part of it. They've also screwed the Lakers once already, and I think they take great joy in that.
Yeah, yes, that's a good point, actually. Yeah.
Bruce Brown was set, I believe, from all the reporting after the fact and during that, you know,
he the Lakers thought they had Brown.
Yeah, and then they went and threw him a $22 million per year deal to go sign with them, which they
got them Siakam.
Yeah, they flipped into Siakam, so they were 100% correct in that. But I think they took joy in that, and I can see them taking joy in this as well. But hopefully, again, I'm hopeful that, you know, they pass on Ayton. But that is, to me, a possibility. They lost their starting center, can go get one for a lot cheaper, be a stopgap, get him for 1 year, and then reset next year with Halliburton back healthy.
Yeah, I mean, the pettiness angle was one that I hadn't weighed. That nope, we're back to 60-40, Raj. Look at that. You brought me back down.
Sure.
But no, I don't know. I actually wasn't as angry at them letting Turner walk and getting under the luxury tax in a year that you aren't going to have Halliburton anyway. Like, if Hallie was healthy and they did that, absolutely, I would have a lot to say about.
He's ownership. 25, Anthony. He's 25.
Yeah,
he's going to come back fine from this. 100% fine.
He will. But it's like, I don't know. It may be in the time between now and when he is fine, when he is actually fine. Now, where I think they erred was not trying to find a way to get something for Turner. Like, if you're going to lose him after all of these years of him being on the trade block, he now leaves via free agency. That's kind of funny. But like,
after their best year, he leaves. And his best season, too.
Just, yeah. So, out. Like, I, you know, I understand why people are connecting that dots. I'm not telling you or anybody who feels that way that you're wrong. I just personally, look, man, a blown Achilles is a blown Achilles, and it's a year-long injury that sometimes guys aren't fully back from for 2 years, right? Kobe never recovered. Now, he was much older. KD, I don't think has been the same athlete that he was pre-Achilles. Again, older, but yeah, I don't know. I kind of understand Indiana. And maybe this is confirmation bias, because if they feel this way, that gives the Lakers a better chance of getting Ayton. But I kind of understand Indiana saying we aren't going to be very good. The whole reason that we were even, you know, we had any success at all these last couple of years, he is not going to be back for a full season. And even then, he'll be getting his legs back under him when he does return. Let's just see what we can further supplement him with. I don't know if I even want Miles Turner at 20. What did he get? 25, 26. I don't know if I want that. Like, I don't know if I want Miles Turner for that amount of money.
I think that's a fine number for Miles Turner, especially where the cap is going, the way that it's raising. They got him for a 4-year deal, 4-3+1. So he has a player option at the end of it. I guess, not to go long on Turner, but it would be different to me if it was just a purely talent thing. But the reasoning was ducking the luxury tax, which really has no inherent roster building advantage other than saving the owner's money. So that's where, just if I'm an Indiana fan and I'm looking at that, I'd be extremely disappointed. This Turner was a monster. I put a lot of credence into playoff performance, and Turner showed a level of toughness, a level of being able to rot.
Until the final. He wasn't very good in the finals.
I mean, he was playing a team that won 68 games. That was a really darn good team. But
if you're keeping him to maintain your finals chances, and the guy just sucked in the finals, then like I think it's fair to consider that a part of it too. Yeah. You don't want to overreact, right? Like I don't think you want to overreact to one series when he had multiple good ones before then.
That's fair. Yeah, I disagree with them letting him walk, but I could see the rationale if it was purely a basketball decision, but it being mostly from a luxury tax standpoint, I feel like
you want my tinfoil hat theory.
Go ahead.
I think they let him walk so that Milwaukee could screw up their books for the next 5 years. They're going to have $22.5 million in dead cap money. And I don't think it's like, I think it's cool that Milwaukee is doing everything that they possibly can to make it known to Giannis that we still believe in you. We want to keep you here. We want you to retire here. We are willing to do whatever it takes to keep you here on, you know, and stuff. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
But also $22.5 million of dead salary on your books for the next 5 years to sign Miles Turner to a $25 million contract. That's $50 million of Miles Turner moving forward. And I don't know that I'd be all that comfortable with that. I wasn't sure about $25 million, but if you're screwing up your cap to the tune of like $47.5 million, whatever it is, that's
yeah. We were talking about the Ayton giving up, you know, that much money. That's kind of a rarity in the past. Damian Lillard, 2 years, $110 million being waived and stretched. That is unprecedented. Yeah, that is just an insane decision to come up with. But again, they must feel Giannis's, you know, breath right on their neck. I mean, this is the type of this breeds desperation. That's the way it feels to me. So we just see how Milwaukee goes through that. But I guess their thinking is if Giannis leaves, then none of this really matters. We will eat that money and we'll just be bad. And but this is worth it to get Giannis to continue to extend, which credit to them. Every time Giannis even blinks, they get to work. So I definitely I respect it.
Giannis is like a college football coach who, like, every time another job opens up is like, yeah, you know, I could see myself coaching at UCLA, and then they get a new contract, you know. Oh, yeah. You get this giant new contract. Let's go ahead, and before we go to the starred comments that we got over the course of the conversation, let's let you talk about Jake LaRavia. Let's let you talk about Adu Thierro. I don't know why I always kind of pause on his name. Adu Thierro.
Yeah.
Who do you want to talk about first?
We can start with Laravia. I wrote about him. I have a piece about him coming out tomorrow morning. But Anthony, he to me plays the way we want Rui to play. Like, so we've been really trying to make these power forwards into small forwards, right? And I think we've been doing this since the Kuzma days. Like, Kuz to me at his best is probably a four, but we've really tried to masquerade him as a three. Laravia moves and has the smoothness of a three and just the way he shoots. And I, you know, tweeted out his shot chart today. That dude does not color outside the lines. It is inside the paint and three pointers. Has no confusion of what he is, doesn't try to do anything fancy. You'll never see him do a three dribble step back fadeaway. It is all just incredibly straight line in terms of how he contributes. But that dude is an awesome shooter, 43% last year. He's a really great relocation shooter. He can shoot off the move, which is something we've been looking for forever. Not a great athlete, but can use his size and his strength to kind of get to the rim, attack closeouts very well. Just like if you were going to build the modern player, like the archetype, I feel like he kind of fits in that. And I like it a lot at the $6 million mark that they got him at, you know, for 2 years. But reminds me of, like, he reminds me of Kuz with a little better jump shot and just more flow on the offensive end as a movement shooter. I'm excited for him. It's obviously same agent as Austin. And so, you know, we got both of them on this team, but I like Laravia a lot. We'll see what he is next season. All of his stuff was like low volume and he was traded mid-season to the Kings. So, you know, tough to kind of assess a lot of what they were doing in the second half of the season when they had the Levine trade. But Laravia is fun. Knockdown shooter, exactly what you're looking for. I did not expect him to be the only move 48 hours in to free agency, but I've watched every Laravia field goal over the last, he's only been in the league 3 years, so it didn't take long. But yeah, Laravia is a really fun prospect and a guy that I think the Lakers are betting on. If you give him more minutes, his production, you know, will increase. Smart defender too. One of the best wing defenders that we've had, you know, in a while. But what do you like about him?
Well, I like the shooting. 100%.